Hey there, Wyoming. This is Amy Martin, and you're listening to Threshold. Can I just say, I love your state? Like, seriously. It has a magic to it. And I'm not just saying that because you have a bison on your state flag, although that definitely helps. Another thing you have is an incredible public radio station. I love how innovative Wyoming Public Radio is and how dedicated they are to providing quality journalism to their listeners, meaning you. If you're not already subscribed to their podcast, Human Nature, please subscribe right now. It's a wonderful show. And while you're doing that, if you feel like subscribing to Threshold, that would be cool too. I'm so honored that Wyoming Public Radio decided to bring this entire first season of Threshold to you that I wanted to do something special to thank them and you. So what you're about to hear is some extra content that hasn't been heard on any other radio stations. This is a special Wyoming-only episode that we're sneaking in before we bring you the season finale. For the first 20 minutes or so, we're going to travel back in time to trace the human-bison connection starting way back. And then after the break, we'll hear some bison stories from listeners. So grab your hiking shoes, buckle your seatbelts, and let's go back. It's 150,000 years ago, and you live in Africa. You're an early member of the species Homo sapiens. Anatomically, you're no different than the humans alive today. And you, my friend, are extremely adventurous, because you and your community get this crazy idea to start walking north. Away from your home, away from everything you've ever known, we don't know why. We do know there have been a few other limited forays out of Africa by earlier types of hominids, but you're the first of the Homo sapiens, the first member of our own species, to make the journey.
They show up in the Levant. There are a number of sites in Israel.
That's John Hoffaker.
I'm a fellow at the Institute of Arctic and Alpine Research at the University of Colorado Boulder, and my field is archaeology and more generally paleoanthropology.
So let's define a few terms here quickly. Paleoanthropology is essentially human evolution, and the Levant, which John just mentioned, is kind of like the Eastern Mediterranean. Think Syria, Israel, Lebanon, Jordan. That's where you're hanging out for a while. A good long while, about 30,000 years, actually. And you're not the only thing walking around on two legs at that time. You've got company.
Neanderthals.
Homo neanderthalensis. You've come up to the Levant from the south. Neanderthals have come down from the north. And even though they're different from you in some ways, they aren't different enough to stop you from getting busy.
Love. Exciting and new.
Yeah, don't even try to deny it. We know you found those Neanderthals pretty sexy. The proof is in your genes. That's G-E-N-E-S, not the other kind.
We know that everybody outside Africa, this is everyone, carries a small percentage of Neanderthal genes.
Homo sapiens likely mated with Neanderthals at a couple of different historical moments, but this was probably the first one. So anyway, there you are, hanging out by the Mediterranean, sipping Mai Tais, flirting with Neanderthals for 30,000 years or so. But then, you leave. For unknown reasons, after this first excursion out of Africa, you turn around and walk home. Why? Maybe your Neanderthal lover broke your heart and you went home to lick your wounds. Who knows? In any case, you stay in Africa again for 10 or 15,000 years until you feel that urge to explore again. Or maybe you just get really hungry. But in any case, what happens is...
What happens is that at some point after 75,000 years ago, our immediate ancestors, people who are ancestral to the lineages that are distributed across the earth today, expanded out of Africa again. And this time, the expansion was extremely successful and very rapid.
You and your friends and family head north again, but this time you really go for it. Part of the group sticks to the coastline and splits for the east.
They move very quickly along the coast, along the southern edge of the Arabian Peninsula, onto the Indian subcontinental coast, and then eventually into Southeast Asia. We know they're in Australia by about 50,000 years ago.
So that's what part of your group does, but you take a different route.
There's some genetic evidence that people were going north at the same time.
You go up through the Levant, like you did in that first excursion out of Africa, but you don't stop there this time. You go on through Turkey, over the Balkan or the Caucasus Mountains, and then you see it. This hairy, horned creature with a big hump on its back. It's your first encounter with a bison.
Of course, they met a bison, and very quickly, they were one of the biggest game, you know, in a distant period, in the steppe and the tundra.
This is, well, I'll let him do the introductions.
My name is Jean-Philippe Bruegel. This is a French pronunciation. John-Philippe Bruegel.
Well, I like the French pronunciation better.
Okay.
Jean-Philippe is a paleontologist. I reached him via Skype in Kenya where he was doing field work. And he says that as you explored Europe, you found bison everywhere.
In France, in Germany, in Poland, in Ukraine, steppe bison.
These were steppe bison. That's steppe like grassland, not like stepsister. Your old friends the Neanderthals had been hunting them for tens of thousands of years, and you quickly started to hunt them too, as you moved from the Middle East, throughout all of Europe, and into Russia. So where did all these bison come from? Well, Jean-Philippe says bison can be traced back to early bovines in India and China about 3 or 4 million years ago. Those animals moved north.
And then the steppe bison were probably evolved in Siberia.
From Siberia, the steppe bison spread out in all directions. They traveled west all the way to France and east over the Bering Land Bridge into the Americas, where they later evolved into the bison we still have today. But you're not even close to that land bridge yet. You're still in Europe. And you're so fascinated with this beautiful and delicious animal you've bumped into that you can't quit taking its picture. Or doing the paleo version of that.
Of paleolithic hunters, with the horses, the bison was the most painted.
Along with horses, bison was the most painted, he says. And not only painted, but engraved on portable art. Pebbles and bones and ivory that you carved on and carried with you.
Bison was, with the horses, was the couple, the magic, we can say the magic couple of these people, you know.
Bison and horses were the magic couple, he says.
No, it's very close with what we found in the Christmas time in the small Jesus. Jesus is with a horse and a cow. It's very funny. I used to say that to my people when I make a conference and so on, and they are always surprised, you know. But this duality, this couple. It's come from very, very long time, and there is very, very deep roots, in Europe.
The horse and the bison, a sacred pair, like the donkey and the cow. But of course, you, as a paleo human, you are eating the magic couple.
I mean, everyone's a hunter-gatherer, right? So they're gathering plant foods and hunting small and large game.
That's John Hofaker again. And he points out that you need every calorie you can find just to fend off the cold as you spread out over Europe and Asia. You're not in Africa anymore.
We have dated human remains showing up in places like Western Siberia, all the way up at latitude 57 degrees north, which is in the subarctic part of Western Siberia. It's a pretty cold place. And those date at least as early as 45,000.
We think of Siberia as being cold now. It was even colder then. No other humans have been as far north as you, ever. So how do you survive in that biting wind and that frigid air?
We know that particularly the northern people living in northern Eurasia were operating what I would call a high-tech hunter-gatherer economy.
You innovate.
They were able to design insulated clothing, for instance, so they could deal with winter temperatures of, minus 20 below centigrade, that kind of thing.
The brutal Siberian conditions spark a tech boom.
It involved a lot of complicated technology like traps and snares, fish weirs, all the fancy equipment.
You get better and better at hunting these animals. You study their behaviors. You teach your kids all about them. The survival of your community depends, at least in part, on your bison expertise. So you attune yourself to their rhythms. You go where they go. And season by season, year by year, you make your way through Siberia. You go further and further east, walking and hunting, hunting and walking, until eventually you hit the ice.
They would have seen something like what you see if you go to Greenland today, right? You see this enormous, this massive wall of ice.
For 30,000 years, you've been wandering through Eurasia. You've crossed mountains, forded rivers. Some of your relatives even figured out how to get themselves to Australia, for goodness sake. And in all that time, nothing has stopped you. Until now.
I mean, we're talking about something that's several miles thick, ultimately, in the center. So, yeah, it's a complete and total barrier to terrestrial, you know, animal life.
After this incredible journey out of Africa, you finally hit a wall. A literal wall of ice.
We can't say for absolute sure that people saw those ice sheets. I mean, I don't see any reason why they wouldn't have.
And no one's crossing that ice sheet. Not the squirrels, not the bison, and not you.
Nothing much to eat up there.
So you stop. And where are you exactly? Well, you've arrived somewhere very special. You're not in Asia, and you're not yet in North America either. You're in a land that no longer exists today. We're going to leave you here in this strange place for a minute, so take a load off. Pull that bison hide around your shoulders and rest up. You're going to need your strength, because your world is about to get a whole lot colder. Welcome back to Threshold. I'm Amy Martin, and you are an adventurous human living in a place that is now underwater. The time is about 30,000 years ago, and the place is called Beringia.
So when sea level fell by 50 meters, there was a land connection between Alaska and Northeast Asia.
Once again, that's paleoanthropologist John Hofacker. And you've probably heard that land connection referred to as the Bering Land Bridge. But John says a lot of scientists now think that the word bridge kind of calls up the wrong image. Beringia was a big chunk of land, like a mini continent. Walking the full length north to south would be like walking from Chicago to New Orleans.
The Bering platform is quite broad. It stretches about 1,500 kilometers from north to south. And it's like a giant piece of the continental shelf. When sea level falls several hundred feet below its current level, you get this enormous plain exposed.
That plain was big enough to support a lot of bison and other animals. So John says you probably lived in Beringia for a while, like 15,000 years. You and the mammoths and the horses, the American scimitar cats, the woolly rhinoceros, the cave lions, and your old pals, the bison, which you'd been depending on throughout this epic journey. As it turns out, you need them now more than ever. A major cold snap is on the way. The death throes of the Ice Age, which scientists have named the last glacial maximum.
It was an extremely cold period that took place beginning about 30,000 years ago up to about 16,000 years ago. During this period, temperatures worldwide fell significantly by several degrees centigrade, and there was an expansion of existing ice sheets in North America, over northwestern Europe.
This is a really intense time to be a human. all over the world, people are struggling to adapt to this sudden drop in temperatures.
It was an incredibly sharp fall.
It's kind of a global freakout.
That's right. We have the ice sheets are rapidly expanding, temperatures are falling dramatically, and sea level just plummets. We know that people are abandoning areas in Siberia. They're abandoning probably areas, many areas in Europe. They are abandoning places like North Africa, the Arabian Peninsula.
But for you, in Beringia, things aren't so bad. Some warmish, moist air is blowing your way off the North Pacific.
We have a relatively rich environment, biologically, in terms of plant and animal life, in this newly created southern portion of the land bridge. I mean, if you're looking for a place to stay during the last glacial maximum, turns out that South Central Beringia was probably a pretty attractive place.
This is counterintuitive. John says no one in his field really thought that hanging out somewhere between Siberia and Alaska would be a good survival strategy in cold snap.
We thought of Beringia during the last glacial maximum as being sort of the last place on Earth that, you know, anyone would want to live.
But bit by bit, evidence is mounting that people actually did live in Beringia for quite a while, instead of just passing through it. This idea is called the Beringian standstill hypothesis, and John is quick to point out that it's just that, a hypothesis, and not all of his colleagues support it. Let's pan out for a minute here and look at your situation. You are perched on the threshold of the Americas. I know I'm being self-referential, but I can't help it. That's actually where you are, sitting at the doorway to this whole new continent where no people have ever been yet. But what's really crazy is that you don't even know that the Americas exist. You've gotten closer than anyone, but all you can see is this huge ice sheet. You have no idea how close you are to these enormous land masses on the other side that are teeming with life. From your perspective, the world ends here. Until the world starts to warm up.
The climate is increasingly warm. Plant and animal life is rich.
For thousands of years now, maybe 15,000 years, me and my family have been hanging out in Beringia. The ice starts to retreat, starts to warm up. How quickly does that warm up happen?
It seems to happen very quickly.
And the bison start to move. Remember, their ancestors had crossed into the Americas long before, hundreds of thousands of years before you even left Africa. And in fact, Beringia was a passageway that bison used in both directions. As the ice grew and shrank over the millennia, they moved back and forth from Siberia to Alaska. So as the world warms, they continue this pattern and migrate east. And you migrate too. These animals are your partners, your lifeline, and now you walk with them into a whole new world.
People are walking into what's basically a paradise, right? There's nobody else there, there's no humans there, never have been, and the game is plentiful.
You have entered North America. And guess who's waiting for you? Yep, more bison. You find great herds of them, like manna from heaven.
So it's not surprising that we have really an explosion, a population explosion here that, you know, rapidly fills in both continents.
You first encountered them as you left Africa. You hunted and painted them for tens of thousands of years as you explored Europe and Asia. You wrapped yourself in their hides in the brutal cold of the last glacial maximum. And now, as you walk into the Americas, there they are, great herds of them, filling this new land you're discovering. After all this time of depending on bison, co-evolving with them, really, their presence must have felt almost inevitable. Like, wherever there's grass, there's bison. Because that had been the human experience for more than 60,000 years. We'll have more after this short break. Welcome back to this special episode of Threshold that we put together for Wyoming Public Radio. I'm Amy Martin, and back at the beginning of our season, we asked listeners to call us with their bison stories. And so what I'm going to bring you now are some highlights from those calls, starting with Tyler.
My family took our first trip to Yellowstone when I was, 8 or 9 years old. And I remember driving into the park, the very first bison that we saw, we of course stopped the car, and all of the kids in the car had pressed our face against the glass, and we were so excited to see this huge animal crossing the road. And as it was slowly crossing the road, just taking its time, he kind of like looked right back at us through the window and made eye contact with me and my cousins, and we were so excited, and he kept walking a little further down the road, and then he turned around and lifted his tail and took a huge poop right on the yellow line in the middle of the road. And then he hurried off the road and rejoined his herd. My mom would later say that the bison was expressing his opinion of tourists in Yellowstone. That's the story of the first time I saw a bison in the wild. Thanks. Bye.
A listener named Daniel also had a formative memory of bison in Yellowstone.
I grew up in Montana, and every summer we went on vacation to Yellowstone National Park, and I'll never forget the yellow slips of paper that they gave to you when you came into the park that featured a picture of a tourist being gored by a bison from behind, and he's flying up into the air very dramatically, and it looks incredibly painful and frightening. And my mother would always show me that paper, and I remember learning what the word gore meant, to be gored by a bison. And I'll never forget those little yellow slips of paper that they gave out.
We have a picture of one of those flyers on our Facebook page. A listener named John had an experience of feeling how dangerous bison could be on a trip to the National Bison Range many years ago, when he took his friend Roscoe to see the herd.
The bison kind of kept moving down towards the road, and pretty soon, before I realized it, we were pretty much surrounded. And Roscoe reached out the window and decided he wanted to touch one of the buffalo, a big bull. And I, in horror, shrieked, you know, "Pull your hands back in, Roscoe. Do you see the size of that head? If he turns the wrong way, he could just flip this Subaru on his top." So Roscoe dutifully put in his hand, and we did find a path through the buffalo, but it was pretty tense there for a while.
You might recall that the National Bison Range is on the Flathead Reservation, which is home to the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes. This is a call from Alicia, a tribal member who lives close by.
I'm a Native American. I'm a rancher. I'm a part of the CS and KT tribe. I go to the Gardner area and I hunt buffalo every year. And I do love the buffalo. They're amazing creatures. They touch my heart. They mean much to me. I don't necessarily like killing them, but I appreciate what they give back. I want them on my land, on the land that I lease. I have cattle, I have longhorn cattle, they're great. But to me, the land does belong to the buffalo. They were here first. They do belong here. I think it's fair to share the land, and I do wish I could see them roaming, especially on my reservation, because I live on a reservation and they belong here. Buffalo absolutely, positively deserves a place in Montana. No doubt about it. They're amazing animals, and they give back so much.
Folks in Wyoming might be familiar with Ralphie, the bison who serves as the mascot for the University of Colorado in Boulder. And I'm guessing you probably also know that Ralphie is actually a female bison. Well, this next caller, Aaron, has a story of a male bison calf named Sarah. Aaron met Sarah years ago when he spent a summer working for the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe in South Dakota. Sarah's mom had died, and one of Aaron's jobs was to bottle feed him.
I would go out into the garage, and I would open the screen door, and he would, like a Pavlovian sign, he would come running over, and I would just get the door open, and I would stick my arm through with the warm milk, and he would take that down in, I don't know, 10 seconds. He had these horns that were getting bigger, that I don't know, maybe 5-6 inches by the time I left, and he would butt you with it, and he'd just kind of pound on him. He'd like just shove him on his hump, and then keep his head away. As he didn't seem like it was malicious or anything. It was just like, hey, give me some more food. I'm hungry here. So that was an interesting aspect of things. And my parents have came out and visited, and they've got video of me just kind of clowning around with him in the yard on a rainy, muddy day, and that super slick gumbo as I'm just running around the yard, and he's just chasing me and heading me off and butting me and all of that. So that was interesting. That seemed like it was going to become unsustainable at some point pretty soon based on his rapidly growing size.
One of the interns on our show, Zoe, called in to tell her first memory of seeing bison when she was a little girl in Arkansas.
So I was good, and I helped my grandpa with errands and helped around the house. I would get taken to go see the buffalo. And by the buffalo, we literally meant one singular buffalo that was just living in what felt like downtown Hot Springs, Arkansas, that was just in the middle of town. And I remember thinking how big it was. I remember I'd always go up to the fence and try to stick my hand through because I really wanted to pet it.
And finally, Chris called in a story that was really more like an essay or a poem. Chris grew up on the East Coast, but in 1976, he headed west.
We camped in the Badlands. It was wide open country. In the moonlight, I went off by myself and sat on a nearby ridgetop, taking in the new universe around me. The stars of the night sky were magnificent and almost overwhelming, and I fell asleep amongst the sagebrush listening to the coyotes. It must have been about 5 or so in the morning when I slowly opened my eyes to behold the rising sun lighting the eastern sky. I propped my head up while still zipped in my sleeping bag to watch the unfolding picture, when all of a sudden a deep, low, rumbling grunt bellowed right behind me, shaking my being wide awake. I was almost afraid to turn around. There, only 10 feet away, was the shadow of a moving mountain. I realized that it was a lone old bull bison. We looked at each other for some time, and I, being a newcomer, was unsure of what his next move would be. After several minutes, he continued grazing, slowly walking away, and I, deeply humbled, was given my official welcome to the West. I believe any personal experience with bison is a blessing. To me, this animal will always be the link between the grounded earth and the ethereal spirit world. I hold them close to my heart. Thank you very much.
That's it for this special episode of Threshold. Stay tuned for the season finale coming up in just a few seconds. And once again, thank you to Wyoming Public Radio and all of its members and listeners for sharing this journey through the story of the American bison with us.